Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio, a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. And I'm very honored and pleased to be continuing our extensive and very thought-provoking and very useful series that we have created with Dr. Michael Armour. For decades, Mike Armour, known as Dr. Mike, has compiled an exceptional leadership record in far-ranging fields of endeavor. He is a multidimensional achiever, and it consistently puts him in demand as an executive coach, business advisor, and trainer focused on management, leadership, cultural transformation, and other aspects of enhancing performance at both individual and organizational levels. After sharing his insights in face-to-face meetings and speaking engagements for so long, Dr. Mike recently ventured into the podcast talking about themes, tops of mind in the C-suite. He's appeared here on Close Up Radio many times in the ongoing series and also television video interviews that we've done at our close-up television studio. And also I had the opportunity to visit him and his team out in Dallas, Texas, and throughout the region. And those were fantastic video presentations and television video interviews. Dr. Mike holds a PhD from UCLA and has achieved triumphs in some of the most challenging leadership scenarios. And that has included turning around organizations that were headed for collapse. And he is uniquely qualified to help any organization in any location or industry face the challenges that they face, such as economic downturns, geographically dispersed team members, and the eroding sense of accountability in the workplace, which is the theme for this particular episode in the ongoing series and kicking off our June repertoire of episodes. For years, companies and their leaders have grappled with accountability and what it really is and how to achieve it more effectively. Over 80% of managers acknowledge their inability to hold others accountable successfully. So this is a crucial concept for discussion. Be sure to listen to Dr. Mike's ongoing series, but also his take and his strategies for improving a recently dismal outlook on accountability. It's going to be a fascinating conversation. Looking forward to it. Dr. Mike, welcome back. Thanks for joining us once again here on Close Up Radio. It's so great to have you with us once again.
It's great to be with you. I really look forward to this month and the topic we're discussing because it is so relevant to what many people are facing on a daily basis.
You know, it really, really is. And accountability is a very important word. Do you really think, that it's eroding? I mean, we've been talking about the thought of doing this kind of conversation for a while, and I'm so glad we're kicking it off on this episode. What is it about this focus on accountability that led you to want to make a month focused on it?
A number of things contributed to my decision to pursue this on a lengthy series of discussions rather than just one brief show. My most widely read book, and you and I have talked about it on previous programs, is Leadership and the Power of Trust. And I wrote that now 17 years ago and recently released it in a second edition. And one of the themes that we deal with when we're talking about trust, building trust, running organizations in such a way that you maintain high levels of trust with employees and with clients and customers, with the general public, is being accountable. Nothing destroys trust more quickly than refusal to be accountable. People expect us to face up to our responsibilities, accept our mistakes, and make amends for those things. And if we aren't accountable in that way, they will not tend to trust us. So I've been thinking about accountability ever since I started writing that book nearly two decades ago and brought it to press shortly afterward, and have continued to keynote on trust themes over the intervening years. But what has happened is when I bring up the topic of accountability, I'm seeing a lot more interest in it now than I did even when I wrote the book. And there was a lot of interest then. I mean, we were right after the Enron scandal. We had all kinds of national setbacks in the business and commercial world that were because people did not act responsibly or accept accountability. So there was a lot of interest in it back then. But today, it seems that I'm frequently drawn into conversations with people who are concerned about the erosion of accountability that you spoke to in your introduction when you mentioned the survey that says the majority of managers have concerns about how they can be more effective in holding their people accountable. As a preliminary to this particular program, I did a podcast series a few weeks back in which I devoted a series of podcasts to different aspects of accountability than we're going to be dealing with here, but a complementary set of considerations. And I have never had a response to a podcast series like the one I had to that. The people who responded on social media, the number of new listeners that I picked up. So I just see a lot of indicators that people are really concerned about this issue, and it's time for us to address it at length.
That's terrific. And I'm glad that, you know, everything is in that forward movement for you. Accountability, again, is so important. From your remarks regarding accountability, I'm gathering that it's a subject, you know, obviously of significant interest to you. Why do you consider it, accountability, so vitally important?
There are a number of factors that figure into that, but if I had to find one word that is the most weighty of those factors, it would be complexity. It's hardly a secret that our world, politically, economically, industrially, becomes more complex and more perplexing with every passing day. In both society and organizational life, complexity is constantly spreading. Modern companies have no choice but to develop organizational structures and systems to manage this complexity. And as this complexity constantly compounds itself, the task of leadership becomes more challenging, more daunting, more consuming. But leadership succeeds only where the sense of responsibility, interdependence, accountability, and duty are strong everywhere in the organization. And those are four key words: responsibility, interdependence, accountability, and duty. So maintaining clear lines of accountability is one of the most essential functions in today's communities, whether we're speaking of social communities, political communities, industrial communities, or any other collective human endeavor. The complexity of our life demands that we all be more accountable.
That's so important. Yeah, right, exactly. Demands is the operative word there. It really does. It's not something that you can just fluff off or shrug off. It's part of it now, and needs to be
embraced. And part of it is that we are in such an interconnected world with technology that is so powerful that when someone is not accountable, the ramifications of their actions, the overflow of the impact they have can do such far-ranging damage or harm that they never took into consideration when they chose to be less than fully accountable. That complexity I was talking about means that the ripple effects of things we choose to do is far greater than it has ever been in the history of mankind.
That's so important for people to realize and to let sink in. You know, it's common in business circles to talk about accountability. From your perspective, what's the basic concept behind accountability?
One of the basic concepts is a rather simple principle, simple to state, not always simple to enforce and respect. But that principle is that people are personally responsible for their individual actions. And I emphasize here their individual actions because sometimes we are at a place, in a scenario, in a situation where things happen that are unfortunate, tragic, that we are not individually responsible for, but we are there. And, you know, we'll have an opportunity perhaps later in the month to talk about those kinds of situations more. But let me start off by putting the emphasis on individual actions. Accountability, yes, there's collective accountability for companies and organizations, but accountability begins primarily with the individual. People are personally responsible for their individual actions. And when their actions fall short of appropriate standards, some punitive personal consequence should ensue. There's no requirement for the punitive measure to be harsh or heavy. It can be nothing more than a small financial penalty, a temporary loss of some privilege, or merely a reprimand. But violations of standards should incur some penalty commensurate with the seriousness of the violation. And the enforcement of that standard by being sure that the penalty is exacted is one of the duties that falls on us as managers and leaders. And quite honestly, I deal with a lot of executives and upper-level managers even who are not comfortable with holding people accountable. There are a number of reasons for that, and I won't go into them now because I rather imagine I'll have an opportunity to touch on some of those with some later topics. But one of the issues that I'm dealing with on a recurring basis in my executive training, my executive coaching, in my leadership coaching, is people who have risen to places of responsibility where they are responsible for enforcing those appropriate standards and seeing that appropriate punitive consequences ensue when someone violates those standards, but they are very uncomfortable in that role and as a result are inconsistent in the way that they exercise that duty. And in that inconsistency, they create an atmosphere in which to those who are looking on, it seems that accountability is not so important after all.
That's important for people, again, to really, really pay heed to because, you know, earlier you mentioned conversations with people who feel that we've seen a major loss of accountability. There is. I would say that there definitely is. Do you agree with that perspective? And if so, again, what has led to your specific conclusion, Dr. Mike?
Much of my conclusion has just been shaped by my own experience, and I'll turn to that here in a moment. But just because I've experienced something anecdotally doesn't establish in my mind that my perspective or my experience is an accurate sample of what's going on. So I will then go to see what more objective studies are telling us. And when you begin that exercise, surveys abound that say that people are finding themselves perceiving the world as losing its priority on accountability. They see in all kinds of working relationships where accountability is not at the level that it once was, and that perhaps accountability has eroded to the point that we're not necessarily in a crisis, but we can see one coming on the horizon unless we turn this about. Now, in terms of my own anecdotal experience, one of the things that I find is true with me is that I'm far less trusting of people than I once was. And keep in mind, trust and accountability have a very close, joined at the hip relationship. When we work with people who are not consistently accountable, we then begin to be more reticent in simply giving them our full trust. And as I look at my life and how I go about my life, if I had to choose one word, I would use the word guarded. You know, I grew up in a small town, 4,000 people. You didn't live there very long before you knew everyone in the town, if not by name, certainly by face. You could walk the streets at night, even the streets that didn't have street lights, and you were safe. It was a typical rural, strong little community. And so I grew up in that world where your instinct was to trust people. You weren't on guard all the time. Moving obviously into large urban areas, I had to become more guarded. And having lived in large cities like Dallas and San Jose and Los Angeles, I became comfortable with the fact that if I went jogging at night, I had to watch out which streets I decided to jog along, et cetera. My life was guarded. But what I'm noticing is over the last 10 to 15 years, I am more guarded in more places than anywhere I've ever been, because I'm not sure of the character and the accountability that may prevail in that space, in that area, in that business, in that environment, whatever it is. And what I'm finding is that when I share that guardedness with people, I get a response in which they say, oh, yeah, I feel the same way. I'm much more guarded now than I once was. Well, that speaks to a lot of virtues that have been eroded, one of them being accountability.
Very important. Yes, on every level possible. You know, as a historian by training, I would imagine you could probably identify a date when accountability began to decline in earnest. Is there a time period? Is there, a date? Can you actually have a date when you notice the starting?
As
that
a historian,
goes beyond when they ate the apple, Adam and Eve.
Yes,
because if you
sometime
really go back,
after they ate the apple, things
then.
Went downhill. If not immediately after they bit the apple.
Right.
My training as a historian was heavily weighted in the study of the ancient and medieval worlds, the early modern period. And so I'm used to looking at things through the lens of hundreds of years, centuries of time, and seeing trends that unfold over time. And occasionally I will try to do that with my own era. 200 years from now, what will historians look back and see as turning points in what we've experienced? And the longer I've done that and the more I've done that, the more that I keep coming back to the Vietnam War as being the turning point that we will see sometime in our future as having unleashed a lot of influences and themes in people's thinking and motifs that have undermined accountability and a host of other things. Why do I pick the Vietnam War? Well, for one thing, I was on active duty in that period of time. So I know that era well from inside the military as well as a citizen looking at it from the outside. And one of the things that stood out to me even while I was in uniform was that suddenly accountability was very selectively applied. For instance, we had some major, major catastrophes in Vietnam, but no flag officer was ever removed for cause due to things that happened under his command. The upper echelon seemed immune from being held accountable. That had not happened in wars previously. Although there was some of that in Korea, it certainly wasn't there in the Second World War. Officers in command were removed without hesitation if they violated some critical principle or ethos or through carelessness caused the needless death of people. We didn't do that in Vietnam. The disrespect for authority became very pronounced in the field. There was a term which younger listeners might not be familiar with, but we certainly knew it in the late 60s. It was called fragging. And that spoke to an enlisted person who would walk by an officer's tent, pull the pin on a fragmentary grenade and toss it in the tent. And many officers in the field were killed by their own enlisted people fragging them. Sometimes people doing this so cleverly and so well that they were never caught. I was in the intelligence world. And what I saw was intelligence was being doctored as it moved up the chain of command so that each person changed the intelligence so it'd be more palatable to the person he was passing it on to because he did not want to get in hot water with that person for reporting something that person did not want to hear. And where we saw this is people like myself who were junior intel officers were working in the field as intelligence collectors in very, very hostile circumstances behind enemy lines in what were called riverine patrols. And the life expectancy in that part of the military operations in Vietnam was only 7 or 8 months. So they would put you out on riverine patrol for 6 months, bring you back to a safe desk job in Saigon to decompress, and then they would put you back out for 3 or 4 months on the river, pull you back, and then send you to the U.S. to a desk job where you could more thoroughly decompress. And many of those desk jobs were in the Pentagon. And so my fellow junior officers were going from being the frontline collectors of intelligence to seeing the final intelligence as it was getting to the desk of the decision makers and realizing that what the decision makers were being told did not line up in critical details with what they knew was going on in the field because the lack of accountability in the system, people were passing along doctored intelligence. And if they were caught, wrists were slapped, but it was never really reversed. The anti-war movement glorified the defiance of anti-drug laws. Remember, that was where we started the phrase, don't trust anyone over 30, which meant anything that had been long-tested standards need to go out because that's those old people's stuff. Coyote was formed, an organization that meant call off your old, tired ethics. There were firebombings on campuses. I visited Stanford to explore doing my PhD there, and windows were boarded up everywhere from the firebombings, from the anti-war demonstrations on campus. All evidence of a deep-seated disrespect for authority and therefore no compulsion to be answerable to it just boiled to the surface in the late 60s as part of the anti-war movement. So that's why I think societally and culturally we are now heirs of those attitudes and outlooks that gelled during the Vietnam conflict.
That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. You know, in your opinion, what's the most troublesome consequence when accountability breaks down on a broad scale? I mean, there's probably a trail of things that actually happen as a result.
There are a lot of things that happen. Because of my interest in trust, you probably won't be surprised that I would answer by saying that the loss of mutual trust is the most consequential. And the reason for that is trust is the virtue on which all human societies are based. If you stop and think about it, probably the first social virtue that we developed as a race was trust. When the hunters went out to track game, leaving their family and their possessions back at the village for days on end, they had to trust that the people back at the village would take care of their wives, their children, their possessions while they were away. If it had not been for that trust, that community could not have functioned. And from that point forward, societies have depended upon trust in order for us to function in a healthy way, to be strong and vibrant. When I can't trust individuals, my distrust of individuals turns into distrust of the sphere which they influence. If I don't trust an individual, then I begin not to trust things they have influence over. In time, that distrust of their sphere of influence involves into distrust of the system. What I'm saying today is a troublesome increase in the number of people who do not trust the system, the political system, the regulatory system, the judicial system, the educational system, the financial system, the system of corporate governance. The list goes on and on and on. But it starts with the breakdown of accountability on the individual level. And when that happens, then there are social consequences such as the suffocating of social vitality. People are not as free and relaxed with one another because accountability is the oxygen of a free society. And my concern is that what is happening is that we are taking the oxygen out of the air that is essential for us to maintain a free society. I've spoken about the guardedness and caution that comes in as a result of accountability breaking down. Everywhere you look, you will be able to see undesirable consequences that play out as a result of accountability no longer being treated with the regard in which it was once held.
You know, that and so many other things in society have broken down on so many different levels, and accountability, as we're talking about in this month of June, is definitely one of them. Next week, we're going to be talking about why is accountability losing ground, as Dr. Mike joins us then as well. You can visit him at leaderperfect.com. That's leaderperfect.com, or MichaelArmour.com, and Armour is A-R-M-O-U-R. Dr. Mike, thanks so much for joining us on the show. These go by so quickly, but you will be with us next week, 2 p.m. Eastern. Looking forward to that as well, and thanks so much for joining us on this episode of Close Up Radio.
It's always a joy. I look forward to next week.
thanks for all the wit and wisdom as well. It's invaluable as we tackle this very important topic here on the program. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Jim Masters, we appreciate you being with us as well. And stay tuned. I'll be back momentarily with another fascinating guest on Close Up Radio. Again, if you would like to connect with Dr. Michael Armour, you can go to leaderperfect.com as well as michaelarmour.com. For all of us here, Jim Masters, thanks for being with us. Have a great day, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.